You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Sadanand Dume of the American Enterprise Institute, writing for the Wall Street Journal editorial page on the tragedy in Kabul and how this connects with what we know about Pakistan's military and its government over these last two decades during the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan. Sadanand, a very good evening to you. The allegation over the years is that the state security, the intelligence services in Pakistan called the ISI, even more particular than that, Steve Cole, the distinguished journalist, has written of the Directorate S within ISI, is integrated with the Taliban ambition these many years. In fact, some go so far to say as the ISI created the Taliban. If that is true, where is the ISI, where is Pakistan in this tragedy that we're witnessing in Kabul? Good evening to you.
A very good evening to you too, John. That's a great question. The point I was trying to make in my column really is twofold. The first is that as we have a kind of national postmortem and we figure out what went wrong in Afghanistan, one important reason, obviously not the only reason, there's enough blame to be spread around, but one important reason for our failure in Afghanistan was that we failed to get Pakistan to stop providing safe havens to the Taliban, which, as you know, makes it very, very difficult to win a counterinsurgency when the side you're fighting is able to simply slip over the border for rest, recuperation, medical treatment, and so on, which was one problem over the last 20 years. The second major point I'm making was that one of the major consequences that people are not talking about enough, in my view, is that this is going to have consequences for Pakistan and destabilize the larger South Asian region. In terms of your question of where it leaves the ISI now, I think they're in a cleft. The dominant view in the Pakistani military would be one of jubilation because they have waged this war for 20 years. They have, frankly, lied where it suited their policy interests to the United States, and they've got away with the lie. And now their decades-old dream of acquiring what they call strategic depth, which is essentially a client state in Afghanistan, looks like it's about to be completed. On the other hand, I don't think they should be so sanguine because some of the fundamentalist forces that they have empowered also exist in their own society in fairly large numbers. And I would not be surprised to see those same forces that have come to power in Afghanistan now feel emboldened in Pakistan and begin to try and assert their will and begin to try and accelerate the process of Islamization, if you will, of hardline Islamization, if you will, in Pakistani society as well.
In your column, you quote from the distinguished historian and activist Sarah Shays, who was once an advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but really has been in and out of Afghanistan since she reported for NPR when we initially went into Afghanistan in 2001. She speaks to you, quote, "We found ourselves in an incredibly bizarre situation where you are paying the country that created your enemy so that it will let you keep fighting that enemy. My head is spinning around. I followed the case. Will that be continuing to be true? Will we be paying Pakistan to allow us not to fight the Taliban? Does Pakistan lose a source of income from us now that we're out of there?"
Well, John, to his credit, President Trump, this is one of the things that President Trump did, in fact, figure out. And in 2018, he basically slashed military aid to Pakistan. There's very little U.S. military aid to Pakistan now because he also saw the ridiculousness of this, that we were paying the Pakistani military, which was then funding, arming, and training the Taliban. So that part is gone. But I do think that what we may end up with, if we're not careful, is Pakistan again demanding or extracting resources from the U.S. in order to keep their friends, the Taliban, quiet. I think they're very, the sort of the military and the ISI is very good at playing this game. And I don't think they would like to give up entirely what has been a lucrative source of revenue for them, and which is frankly made their many personal fortunes. I mean, you see this in the grand mansions in Lahore, Karachi, and Islamabad, made possible by this sort of skillful milking, I would use the term, of U.S. aid.
The Delhi point of view now, watching this, China is said to be opening relations with the Taliban. Russia is opening relations with the Taliban. We know that China and Pakistan have a comfortable relationship, not to say a completely symbiotic relationship, given the amount of aid that flows into Pakistan. Is India the odd person out here? Is India threatened by these three powers working together around Afghanistan?
Absolutely. And I think India is really, if you had to pick the major country that has arguably lost the most after the United States, arguably, it's India. Because India had piggybacked on the U.S. effort for two decades to try and help keep the Taliban out. It was a significant development donor to Afghanistan, not a significant military donor, though it did supply the Afghan army with helicopters and it did train many Afghan officers. And now India finds after 20 years that it's back to square one and the Taliban are in control and Afghanistan has essentially been turned once again into a safe haven for all kinds of jihadist groups, not only the ones that have historically threatened the West, such as Al-Qaeda, but also jihadist groups that have traditionally been focused more on India and the Indian part of Kashmir, including Lashkar-e-Taiba and Jaish-e-Mohammed. So for India, this is a strategic, it's definitely a strategic setback, which is one of the reasons why you have this exaltation in Pakistan and Islamabad, because if you just look at the strategic math very simply and crudely, there's no question that the big winners of this victory have been in South Asia has been Pakistan, and the big loser has been India.
You mentioned Lashkar-e-Taiba, L-E-T. I've spoken with the Middle East as well. I've spoken with Jerusalem about this, and their concern is that Hezbollah or its kindred of Cain, Hamas, are empowered, emboldened, and on the march after this victory in Kabul. Is that true for L.E.T. as well? Can we expect more provocations out of Pakistan directed at India?
I think you can say that that is true of every hardline Sunni jihadist group on the planet. Regardless of how sympathetic they are to the Taliban, and most of them are sympathetic to the Taliban, for the simple reason that they believe that they are in the midst of a kind of religious war. And they believe that armed with little more than faith and determination and God's blessing, their side has won. And part of the problem we have, John, in discussing this and understanding this in places like Washington is that our elites and our policy-making elites are so distant from that form of thinking that they're not able to understand how the enemy thinks. So a great example of this is, you know, Joe Biden's clueless decision in the beginning to withdraw the U.S. troops on September 11th, giving the Taliban the biggest possible propaganda coup before finally he dialed it back. But the mere fact that he could have proposed September 11th, the 20th anniversary of 9/11, as the date initially for withdrawing all U.S. troops, just tells you how clueless our policymakers and our elites in general are when it comes to understanding how our enemies think.
Sadanan, you follow the news in Delhi and Mumbai and the India large cities. Are they expressing shock similar to what we see in London and Paris and Berlin at the Taliban's victory and the U.S. withdrawal?
Absolutely. And in many similar ways, of course, they're shocked, they're stunned by the extent and the speed of the victory. They're very concerned about what this is going to mean for not only India's strategic interests, but for stability. They're very concerned about an almost certain uptick of violence in the Muslim-majority province of Jammu and Kashmir. And they are, many people are, in fact, questioning the wisdom of leaning more and more towards the United States in foreign policy and geopolitics. So this idea that, you know, the U.S. would get out of Afghanistan to focus more on China, it makes a lot of sense on the face of it. But if you do it in this way and you do it in, and you do it in a way that ends up encouraging jihadist groups, then in fact it could end up having the opposite effect. Because countries like India are going to find their hands full. They're going to have fewer resources and they're going to have less time to devote to east, to the Eastern Front and to the oceans. And they're going to have to deal with a revitalized jihadist threat.
Sadanan Dume of the American Enterprise Institute, also for the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, his column. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.